Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians. All while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
Oh, and a very good morning to you. Welcome to Leading Edge Medicine. I'm Lynette here with Dr. Samira Umat. Dr. Jerry Mixon is off for the weekend, so we have Dr. Ken Pentland in the studio. Welcome, doctors.
Hey, good morning, Lynette. Yes. So nice to be here. Good morning, Dr. Pentland.
Good morning, Dr. Umat.
I just realized that you're an early riser.
Yeah, yes. I get up early usually, yeah.
Well, good for you.
You're not an early riser, Dr. Umat?
Oh, I think everybody knows that. But you know what they say? My grandfather taught me this. Early to bed and early to rise makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise. Is that such a thing?
Yeah, I don't know. What about the women? What does it make us?
Well, I think the women are smart anyway.
Yeah, so. We don't need that extra. Yeah.
But we're already up early. Well, yeah. Anyway, into the night, dance into the night, and still wake up early and be refreshed.
That's,
right?
That's true.
It's nothing like a good breakfast when you wake up in the morning and the air is still crisp. It's just a nice thing, you know.
Yes. Yeah. No, I completely agree with you. The morning hours when it is like quieter out, when the world is still stirring, it's just a very nice time. And there's something very beautiful about being able to watch the light come up. Mm-hmm. And if you have, you know, the sunrise, you can watch the sunrise. But there's something very nice about that quiet time when you can begin the daily tasks and kind of feel like you're ahead of the game. And then the busyness of the day stirs in, and then, you know, you have so many stimulation coming in from everywhere.
Yeah. True. Let's go back to that breakfast thing in that early morning. That's so good. I missed breakfast this morning. Drive-in was a little longer and a little slower just because of the rain. So I am very thankful for the yogurts and breakfast bars in the refrigerator here at work. So.
For a long time, I had a sign over my hallway that said, "All happy depends on a leisurely breakfast."
Oh, yeah. Ooh, no, I do agree with you that I think breakfast is by far and away the best meal of the day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what could go wrong? It's just amazing. And then I did also have somebody that used to work at one of the coffee shops here. And basically, you know, I love coffee. And so it said basically that coffee can fix everything.
Yes. So do you do the flavors? I like the pumpkin spice latte this time of year.
Oh, my gosh.
She calls it the PSL.
Oh, the amazing. PSL. Oh, that's right. Yes. I did a seasoned, spiced white chocolate the other day. I just wanted to see what the difference was. But I think my favorite is, and you have to ask for it, is a Cinderella. Oh, a Cinderella. I just like the name of it. But it's basically a white chocolate mocha with one pump of pumpkin. Only one pump of pumpkin. So, all right. So it probably, Dr. Pentland, we shouldn't be talking about this right now, right?
Why not? But, you know, it is an important topic. And maybe, Lynette, after you give out the phone numbers, it is a health-related show.
Yes.
I'd like to maybe talk about the new GLP-1 agonist. Might be timely, actually.
Oh, very good. All right. I'm going to give you the phone number. We are live in the studio with Dr. Umat and Dr. Pentland today. And here is that number to get a hold of us. 1-800 865-8770, whether you want to tell us about your favorite pumpkin spice latte or you have a question for the doctors. We're hoping you'll have a question for the doctors. Dr. Pentland here, Dr. UMAT at 1-800-465-8770. Okay, let's talk.
Right. So, you know, the new GLP-1 agonist medication, which everybody's talking about, Ken, you know about them too, and all our doctors are trained to be prescribers for those medications. They are basically the new diabetes drugs that have mm-hmm. helped and revolutionized the management of type 2 diabetes by helping not only by controlling the sugars, but also with weight loss. And so the newer class of drugs are better than the original class of drugs for weight loss. And what we've seen is that over the course of time, not only have they been successful, but they've reversed the trend in obesity and weight gain in the American population. So we watch this, and there's obviously every drug has a side effect profile. And these are not, different from that. They do carry a huge side effect profile. And we watched and listened and waited for the data to be published. And there was incredible and very compelling data in the research about heart health. Mm. And that's when we started offering our weight management program with the GLP-1 agonist. But what the drugs are literally doing are not only helping in reducing hunger, craving for food, food noise, whatever you may call it, but they are they're suppressing appetite, and as they're suppressing appetite, people are losing weight. What we watch for in the clinic is this fat loss or is it muscle mass loss? Because you're wanting to make sure that your patients lose fat and not muscle. So you do have to educate about that, and you do have to work on that. But when what we're seeing published is that people are losing weight. And with that, their risk for heart disease is decreasing. So not only the risk for a heart attack or a cardiovascular event, but also high blood pressure. And so heart disease risk factors are diminishing, and therefore the profile and then the risks are decreasing. So, you know, with obesity, heart risk has been rising. So now what we're going to start seeing is that cardiac events will be decreasing, which is a great deal. But also the drugs can actually have some effect on addictive behaviors. So people that have addictive personalities that were over drinking, they actually may suppress that desire or the wish to drink. And so addictive behaviors might be coming down. We're noticing that inflammation markers are decreasing. We're also finding out that kidney health is improving. And then there's speculation that as people lose weight, maybe there is an improvement in the osteoarthritis symptoms, for example, knee pain. We all know, and we always tell our patients, you know, if you lose a little bit of weight, you won't hurt as much. The knee joints won't be painful. Mm. So there is a speculation, and we're seeing that now. And so it's not just that there's one aspect of your life that is going to be impacted, which is weight loss. It's actually a whole body phenomenon, starting from the cognitive impact, going down all the way towards heart health, respiratory health, joint health, kidney health, gut health. And so with that, when people use these medications, they actually don't want to come off of them because it has played such a pivotal role in making them feel better. And especially with inflammation markers, what I've seen in clinical practice is that where patients' inflammation markers were always high, now with the medication, their inflammation is actually quietened. And they actually tell me, you know, I'm just feel good. And so things are really significant. And so, yes, the drugs do carry a side effect profile, but despite that, the benefits and the risks have to be outweighed for every patient on an individual basis. And I think they have a very important role to play for many people. And so if you are not sure where you fall in the spectrum and whether you're a good candidate or not, I do think you should talk to your providers. And if longevity is your provider, then come on and talk to us, because I do think it can make a huge difference in how you age.
That's so
especially
good.
This time of year.
Exactly. Oh, yes. Right. You know, yeah, we are inundated. We had our potluck the other day at the office. It was actually
leftovers.
A lot of fun.
There were leftovers in the fridge.
What that means is that when everybody brings a little bit, you tend to eat more than you intended to for that day.
Especially sugar.
And sugar. Uh-oh. And there's pots and pots of candy and sugar everywhere. And as hard as you try, you know, you go, oh, well, maybe one, you know. And that unfortunately, with sugar, the one is never enough. The one is basically the trigger that kind of leads you to want more and more and more.
And I've heard patients say, you know, like you were saying about addictive behavior, sugar is right up there as one of those.
Absolutely, yeah. It is. 100%.
I've heard patients say that their sugar cravings or general types of food cravings would go away.
Go away, yeah. Yeah. Yes, I've heard that too. It's for different things. Some people will tell me that it's for desserts. Other people will tell me it's for different types of foods, but definitely it impacts on cravings. And that's why they're noticing that people that have a personality. Now, I don't know if it'll do anything for those that love to shop.
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
That's also this time
but
of year.
But food, definitely.
True.
And alcohol. And
yeah, we don't need anything for the shopping thing. No, that's just fine. So, wonderful. Lots of good topics to start the day and some things to ask questions about. Our phone lines are actually ringing like crazy right now. Should we go ahead and take a question?
Absolutely. Let's do it.
All right. Carl calling in from Houston. Good morning, Carl. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Carl.
Thank you. Good morning. I actually haven't been able to hear the show since the last time Dr. Pentland was on, and I called in asking about the merits of the cold plunge.
And, yes. You know, yeah. Carl, I'll let you in on a secret. Ken did ask me if we would get any questions on that today. So, and yeah, so thank you for your call. Let's hear your question.
Well, I think Dr. Pentland said he would actually look in to see if there was any data to back up the claims for the benefits of the cold plunge. I wonder if he had a chance to do that.
He has really done that, actually.
Oh, this is good.
This is a great question.
Let's talk cold plunge.
Yeah, right. So a lot of the sort of randomized controlled trials are lacking for cold therapy. However, at least in the form that we're talking about, we're like – improvement for general health. You know, in terms of professional athletics, the data's been there for a while, but you can achieve cold therapy at home in the shower just by turning off the hot water first, you know. But the data talks about the physiological effects of exposure of the body to cold or at least cool water. Enhanced immune function, improved brain alertness, stress reduction. These kinds of things are seen physiologically when you take blood samples before and after cold water therapy. And there's some good articles out there about that.
So are you saying that there is an improvement in physiological function in some way, like blood pressure goes down, heart rate slows down, respiratory rate improves?
Circulation, immune system function, stress reduction, endorphin
stress
release.
Stress reduction.
Yes. All those things. And you can see that in the physiological markers, in white blood cell count and things like that, blood pressure.
So for professional athletes, then you're saying that it's definitely a good thing to try to do that because it stimulates?
Right. Recovery. Improves recovery.
Okay.
Yes. So circulation especially, and it minimizes muscle soreness and things like that.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's why all the football players are in the cold plunge right after, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Marathon
runners,
triathletes. Yes.
Triathletes.
Often
yeah.
Often do that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Swimmers too?
Yeah, I suppose so. I mean, the swim in a triathlon usually is the first thing. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So by the end, you're cycling for quite a while, and then you need to
run
jump
after
in the,
that,
in
right?
The, right?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. All right. And
well,
then for general, so definitely for athletes, general public also may be a good idea because it might support their immune system.
Right. So in the sort of non-professional athlete arena, doing something like hot cold alternating therapy. So that's why I say when you turn in the shower, turn the hot water off first, then you're exposed to cold for about 30 seconds. It tends to, you know, tighten up the skin, burn the circulation to the surface, and it also improves things like skin health as well because of that. So that kind of thing you can do, you know, at home.
So, Carl, do you have another question about that, Carl? I know I have a few.
Yeah, I do have one totally unrelated to that. So you go ahead, doctor.
You know what? Why don't we take a quick break here, and then we will get back to some of your questions, Carl, and we'll talk with the doctors, too. This is Leading Edge Medicine. We are off to a fast start this morning with several callers on the line, and we would love to talk with you, too. Here is the number to get in touch with us. It's 1-800-465-8770. That's 1-800-465-8770. Carl, you hang on the line. We'll be right back with more Leading Edge Medicine.
Hands, touching hands, reaching out, touching me, touching you.
And we're back. Welcome to Leading Edge Medicine. My name is Lynette, here with Dr. Samira Umat and Dr. Ken Pentland today. Dr. Mixon has the weekend off. Although it's not really off because he's working hard somewhere else. Yeah,
yes.
At a conference and doing research and all sorts of things, right?
That's right.
Okay, we've got Carl on the line from Houston. And Carl, you had another question for the doctors.
Well, I believe Dr. Umat said she had a couple of questions more about the cold plunge before I went to my
Well, what course. I wanted to ask was really what is safe for people to do at home, and can they do hot, cold, and then go back to hot again, or is it hot, cold, and then you're done? So what is the cycle,
and is it safe? Oh, that's a very good question. Yeah, so in traditional what they call balneotherapy, which is sort of the therapy related to bath or water, is typically you do hot, cold, and end on cold. So three times, and ending on cold. You always end on cold.
And how? What? And how long should each period last? Hot for how long? Cold for how many seconds?
Traditionally, it's 3 minutes hot, 30 seconds cold.
Oh wow! Okay.
Right? You don't want to stay in the cold too long. And I should also mention that if you have a cardiovascular condition, you don't want to be jumping in ice water. That's not a good idea. It could be actually dangerous. So do take that into account.
Right. It can be a shock to your system.
Yes.
So please, please, pretty please be careful.
Okay. Yeah. That's good. Yeah, my daughter does the hot tub thing, and then they have a cold plunge tub next to it. So there you go. They will do the hot tub, cold plunge, and then, 30 seconds. I'll have to ask her how long she's in there. But okay,
All
Carl,
right, well,
is
that's
that helpful?
Very useful. Thank you, Dr. Pentland.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes. That's great. The totally unrelated question. I've heard a lot in the last year or two about the possible harmful effect of seed oils. I guess the best known would be canola oil, also called rapeseed oil. And is this just kind of a West Coast fad thing? They claim it's inflammatory, or do you think there's anything to that, either one of you?
Mm.
Well, canola oil, yes, it's derived from rapeseed oil, which is toxic, although the oil itself has been processed significantly, but sometimes the processing itself of the oils can have put effects into the oil that aren't healthy as well. So that has to be looked at. Now, of course, they've got organic canola oil, but personally, I tend to avoid that. I found that some research that suggests that it's not good for the heart, and so I tend to avoid that myself.
Mm-hmm. Is it good for anything?
Well, some seed oils I would recommend. You know, there are lots of good ones like avocado.
Yeah.
Yeah. The monounsaturated oils tend to have a good,
right.
good profile.
Correct. And the avocado oil I like to use because it has a high heat temperature, mm-hmm. so you can actually use that to stir fry as well, whereas olive oil cannot be used for that.
Yeah, the smoke point is a good marker to look at.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. Does that help, Carl?
Yeah, that's great. It kind of verifies what I've been hearing. So thank you very much.
Yep. All right. You're welcome. Thank you for calling.
Thank you, Carl. We're going to go to Tacoma now. Susan is on the line with us. Good morning, Susan. Welcome to Leading Edge Medicine.
Good morning, Susan.
Good morning. Yeah, thank you. Good morning. I have a couple of questions. I'm 59. I'm almost 60. I've recently been diagnosed with osteoporosis as a -3. I talked with you guys last week on a drug the doctor recommended, but he also recommended a calcium. Also, I have my white blood cell count is a little below 4. It's like 3.8 or something. And my osteoporosis is a -3. So I have questions about calcium because I've heard kind of negative things about calcium carbonate. And I recently purchased Garden of Life's Vitamin Code Raw Calcium. And I also currently take a mega mineral before I was diagnosed with this that has calcium amino acid chelate complex. Mm-hmm. And the one that I got that from Garden of Life Vitamin Code is a calcium. It says naturally occurring from algae.
Yes.
So a couple of questions, mm-hmm. Are those good calciums to be taken? And yes. Another way to bring up my white blood cell count. And by the way, my weight is reasonable for my, okay. I just had my knee replaced. I'm active. Uh-huh. I hike, I do everything. Nobody can figure out why in the world I've got all these health issues. I'm 5'4". I weigh 140. That's reasonable.
Yes.
I do light weightlifting, little 8-pounders and stuff. I didn't do it for about 3 months after my knee replacement because, I just wasn't able to. So just those mm-hmm. are my main questions. But a good calcium sure. and a way to bring up my white blood cell count naturally. And I take vitamins.
Okay. Those are great questions. Let's maybe start by talking a little bit about what osteoporosis is.
Sure.
It's a great segue into what happens in postmenopause. As you said, Susan, you maintain an active lifestyle. You have an optimal weight. But yet, as women get older, unfortunately, there's a declination in their hormones. And that's just natural physiology. And as estrogen decreases and testosterone decreases in a woman, it predisposes her to loss of bone density. And actually, it happens in men also, but it is more remarkable in women as they approach menopause because that's, like a timeline, and it happens with sudden loss of periods for 12 months, which is when we classify a woman as going into menopause. And and that basically means that the hormones have decreased. Now, it doesn't mean that they suddenly went away in that 12-month period. The declination in hormones has been going on for a long period of time. And hormones are important in bone modification. So a bone has a cortex, which is the outer part of the bone, and a medulla, which is the inner spongy part of the bone. And both parts of the bone have to be strong. And when bone is laid down by these hormones, it makes it strong and pliable. And you know what a lot of times people don't understand is that you lay down bone mineral when you're actually very young. Mm. It happens in your teens and in your early 20s. And by your mid-20s and late 20s, now you start using up what you've put in the bank account. Mm. So you're laying down when you're really young, when you don't even understand and realize it. And then as you get older, you're basically using up the supplies. So you want to build those supplies. So all of you out there that have grandchildren, nieces and nephews and young ones in your life, please ensure that they are not only physically active, but are eating appropriately. So they're laying down bone at a time in their life when it is really important to do so.
I've also seen in men oftentimes when they get to a certain point in their life, they actually have more testosterone than the women at the same age because their testosterone is converting to estrogen.
Estrogen, yeah.
Because they put on a little weight and the fat aromatizes estrogen.
Sure, sure.
And so they actually have more access to estrogen than women do at some point.
Well, yes, but that's not always healthy estrogen for them.
It's true.
That's the last type of estrogen you want in a man. So you don't want a big belly because that is dangerous estrogen for you. You actually want to lower that because whether we block the estrogen or not depends upon how much visceral fat you have. And so the less visceral fat you have, the better off. So basically, testosterone lays down bone, estrogen prevents bone resorption, and as we get older and these hormones get less and less, they predispose us to bone breakage or osteoporosis. And Susan gave her reading of -3, which is actually quite significant. And so her risk of causing a fracture is very high with minimal trauma. And what the medications do is they basically make the cortical bone much stronger so that if you were to have some trauma, you would not break the bone. Mm. However, if the bone does fracture, then it is very difficult to repair.
And to your question
about cap.
You're talking about the supplements, you know,
yes.
Of course, calcium carbonate, like you mentioned, I think is normally derived from things like seashells, which we really didn't, evolve to eat that. we usually got our calcium from plants. So a source like algae is maybe a little bit more like what the body wants. And so the Garden of Life brand, you know, I'm familiar with those kinds of brands. And yeah, that is a pretty reputable one, and the absorbability, the bioavailability of it has a pretty good track record. So I think I'm on board with your choice there. As far as why calcium can be low, one of the things that you might expect me to say and is often overlooked is that stomach acid may be low, right? Mm-hmm. Actually, digestion and absorption of minerals is very important. And that tends to fall off as we get older, but also with stress, zinc and thiamine deficiency, certain medications, dietary factors. If you have low protein or high carb diets, those things can all influence your level of stomach acid, and that can be playing a role as well.
So that basically what you're saying is that they're not absorbing enough from the food that they're eating.
Yes.
And then replacing too much calcium is actually also harmful potentially.
That's true.
Ah, okay.
And so sorry?
I was saying, okay, just kind of listening to you. Okay.
Yeah. So calcium, if it lays down in the lining of the blood vessels, can increase plaque formation, and too much calcium can be harmful. And the other thing that I want to mention is whenever we do a complete metabolic panel and everybody's looking at the serum calcium level, well, that is actually a measure of your parathyroid hormone function. That is, what is the body doing in terms of allowing enough calcium in the serum or not? That has really nothing to do with the calcium that you eat in your diet or the bone calcium. Mm-hmm. So those are very important things. And if that calcium is running high, even by a small amount, actually, it could mean that there's a larger parathyroid issue, which then requires further investigation. So that's actually a serious problem. And it doesn't mean that it's a good thing that you have enough calcium.
You mentioned another point there about calcium where that reminded me that vitamin K is also an important factor.
And vitamin D too.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So they all play
I have been taking vitamin D. I was a member there for a little while at Longevity, uh-huh. and I didn't update my contract because my hours cut drastically because I was out of work and I was, having surgery. I was taking a reasonable amount of vitamin D, anywhere from like 5,000 to 10,000. And my medical doctor, of course, the calcium he gave me, he said, if I'm going to continue to take this, it's a prescription. It's calcium with 600 milligrams and it's only 400 IUs of vitamin D. So he would tell me, don't take the vitamin D that I've been taking. And I'm not that I'm discounting what he said. I agree. I think it's very important to take the vitamin D, and I've been doing that. I was taking I still am currently taking a mega multi-mineral by Solaroy, and it has, you know, all the magnesium. It says, you know, over 100% of the daily recommended value. So I'm wondering, because, you know, I don't want to overdo the calcium. The one that I just started taking from Garden of Life says it's at 85% of the recommended calcium. Should I maybe cut back on the mega minerals since I'm also taking the calcium
the recommendation for calcium in those cases is something like 1,200 milligrams per day, depending on the person.
But you know, Susan, what you're saying just highlights to me how complex this is, right? Mm-hmm. Calcium, vitamin D, vitamin K, and then the fact that your medical provider is asking you not to take too much vitamin D. I wonder if they've done some urine studies. Are they looking at excretion? Are you excreting it too much? And so you have to be, it's complex. You have to be a little bit careful with what you're trying to achieve and what are the medications that you are taking. And so in our clinic, we do like to do a micronutrient test for a nutritional analysis that gives us a idea about cellular level of the vitamins and nutrients. So then we can give more objective measurements. With the objective measurements, we can give more specific guidelines. That's what I'm trying to say.
Okay. So the calcium that I'm taking is a good amount. It's a good kind of calcium. I understand mm-hmm. now why to somewhat avoid the calcium carbonate, because, yes, we don't want to eat shellfish, the shells.
And also pay attention to the acid in the stomach so you absorb calcium in the diet.
Okay. Yeah, I get that. Okay, so I don't think I have a lot of acid in my stomach. For years, I was plant-based, and then as an older woman, I started craving more proteins, and I started eating fish and chicken again. I've spoken with other older women.
Music tells me that I have to go to a break. Why don't you hold on, and let's just continue with this dialogue, because it's an important topic. Okay? Is that okay?
Okay.
Stay right there, Susan. Stay right there, Susan. And Dick, we're going to get to your question as well. This is Leading Edge Medicine, and if you'd like to get through today early on the show, 1-800-465-8770. Taking a break. We'll be right back. If we were playing this and Dr. Mixon was here, he would be dancing all over the place. Yes, he loves that. I think he picked that song for our show. Welcome back to Leading Edge Medicine. I'm Lynette with Dr. Samira Umat today and Dr. Ken. My dad's name is Ken. My brother's name is Ken.
We can have Carl come back.
Where did Carl come from? I'm not sure. Dr. Ken Pentland is here with us today. And we're talking right now about gut health, low stomach acid with Susan, and calcium, about taking that with osteoporosis.
Yeah, and you know, it's, I think it's actually been perpetuated for so long, but I think it's a myth, really. People keep saying high calcium level in the diet will be helpful, especially for bone health. And to some extent, yes, maybe, but the right type, and only in small quantities, really. You don't want to be taking supplements that are high in calcium. And then you mentioned that AlgaeCal may be a good, because it's plant-based.
Yeah. AlgaeCal is a good one.
Yeah.
There's good studies on that.
And I have many of my patients that take that. Mm-hmm. There are studies that they have published as well. That's right. Yeah. So, Susan, we were talking to you. You were saying something before the music came on.
Oh, about the low stomach acid.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't know. I'm not sure how to find out if I have low stomach acid, but I have in the past number of years, in my late 40s, throughout my life, a lot of times I went plant-based or vegetarian. And as I got older, I started consuming more protein because I started feeling like I really needed it. Mm-hmm. You know, and I take, I think in one of these supplements that I'm taking, there's, I can't think of the word, probiotics, you know, to help my stomach and everything like that. Mm-hmm. And, I try to eat lots of fruits and vegetables to, you know, keep me regular and everything like that. And, I think that's where, when you started bringing up the stomach acid, you know, that's where I went. I can't tell if I have too much stomach acid or not. I'm not quite able to tell that.
So, I mean, high acid, everybody knows, because it's reflux. It hurts, right? So everybody knows when they have too much acidity. But what people don't recognize is that low acid actually is probably an equal culprit, if not in some cases more of a problem, and it's a hidden problem. And as we all get older, we tend to make less stomach acid. But the acidity in the stomach is there for a physiological reason. That's how the digestive enzymes become active. They break down the food particles that you've eaten, and they then digest the food to give you the nutrients and the energy. But what really needs to happen is that the sphincter at the top of the stomach, which is the esophagus and the stomach junction, and at the bottom of the stomach, which is the stomach to the small intestine junction, they need to be tightly closed, and that acid needs to stay in the stomach to help digest the food. If those sphincters are leaky or weak, which happens as we get older or we are overweight, then they cause leakage of that same acid back into the esophagus, and that's what people perceive as pain, or I have high acid. It's not that they have high acid. They have the right amount of acid. It's that the right acid is in the wrong place. And that's reflux. And that is dangerous. Mm-hmm. It's painful. It can cause cancer. Mm-hmm. And so that needs to be treated. And so what we do is we take antacids. And those antacids change the environment in the stomach. They make the stomach alkaline, which means that the food that you're eating now cannot be digested. And the nutrients cannot be digested. Therefore, you become deficient in nutrients.
Yeah.
And if you replace that acid in the right place and keep it there, your nutritional deficiencies improve.
Another, besides calcium, iron also is a victim of low stomach acid. When iron is low, sometimes we'll look for low stomach acid as a culprit.
And but you were, there more, aren't there?
There are a lot of people with low ferritin out there, and they're not sure why. But you were asking about symptoms of low stomach acid, like gas, bloating, mm-hmm. belching, heartburn, obviously, nail and hair problems, you know, acne, iron deficiency anemia, restless leg syndrome, and rosacea. All those things can be related to low stomach acid.
Yes, those restless legs.
I don't generally have stomach problems. My nails and hair grow really nicely.
Good.
All that I do have a hard time sleeping at night, and I was taking I have a little bit left of my cream estrogen and testosterone, and that's another thing I was going to ask before. I know you're going to give me some more information. Are there good things that I could get, like from health food stores, like Marlene's, or like Super Supplements, a good testosterone and estrogen that I could take to help me along with all my other issues?
Well, those things are prescription, so you're not going to get it at the store. But there are certain supplements, herbs, and things that help, improve the release of those things, but they're not those testosterone, estrogen directly. And those things you can ask the professional at the store about those.
Yeah. So with your osteoporosis, Susan, I think the best thing for you would be to get estrogen and or testosterone. We are partial because we know the impact of testosterone, and it's huge for women. I understand that due to financial reasons and other things, you are not able to come back to the clinic, but your medical provider can at least put you on some estrogen replacement. So at the very least, try to get on some basic, and there are bioidentical estradiols available on the market now that can actually do the job. So it's not a full program. It's not balancing everything. But because of your osteoporosis, I think you will benefit from considering a good hormone replacement therapy program.
And, I'll add one more tip to that just before we go here. One of the things that causes the thing that causes bone reabsorption is an inflammatory process. Mm-hmm. And the antioxidant that helps prevent that best actually is in pomegranate. So sometimes people will supplement pomegranate extract to help reduce bone loss.
Oh, I thought you were going to say glutathione and come in for IV therapy. You don't have to be a patient to come in for IV therapy.
That's right.
Yeah, we'll talk about IVs here today.
Yes, we will. I hope that's helpful for you, Susan.
I did have one more about bringing up my white blood cell. I'm writing all this down as fast as I can. Antioxidant and glutathione, but white blood cell count. Don't know why it's low. They've tested me for everything I could have, and I don't have any of those. Glutathione, I'm writing that down.
Too. Yeah, so, white blood cell count can run low for multiple reasons. A simple thing, if it's just a little bit low, it's because there's no infection. But for you with the osteoporosis, Susan, it's a metabolic issue. You're running low counts because your whole metabolic pathway is compromised and you have osteopenia and osteoporosis, really. And so that is why your white counts are running low, which then therefore also means that your immune system is compromised.
Okay, that's actually good to know, because I didn't really start having like low white blood cell count till I started to go into menopause. I was in my late 40s, early 50s.
Mm-hmm. So bone marrow, right? Your bone marrow makes the white blood cells. And so when the bone marrow is compromised, then it's going to affect your immune system as well.
Okay, that's good. Thank you. I really enjoyed it. I loved going to the longevity clinic. It's just, I'm going to return. It's just right now. It's not going to happen for a little while, but glutathione I have here in the house. My husband takes that.
Yeah, glutathione is a very important topic, and I think Dr. Pentland loves to talk about it.
Ooh.
But I will tell you, it is the most potent antioxidant available, and it is actually very important. However, oral glutathione is not always absorbed very well. So a lot of people that are taking oral, I just don't know how much is absorbed. I had this passionate conversation with a pharmacist who I've known for over two decades now. And he told me that there is one transdermal glutathione that is actually absorbed very well, and they've done some studies on it. Mm-hmm. Again, I have to take his word for it. I have never tried it. I don't know the product. But Ken, what are your thoughts on oral versus IV versus transdermal glutathione? And let's talk about what is glutathione
to start with. Glutathione.
Well, you know what? Let's hold that.
Okay.
Right. And let's say goodbye to Susan.
Okay.
And we have some callers on the line. But we're going to take a quick break.
Okay.
And then we'll be back because we've got to talk about this. We've got our gut specialist here. So a break happening right now. This is Leading Edge Medicine, and we're going to be back to talk about all the gluta things that I can't pronounce.
Glutathione.
Your gut health, why it's so important. We're going to talk about some IV therapies that we have here. And Dick, we're going to get to your call right away as well, so you hang on the line. And if you'd like to get into the call queue, here's the number to call. It's 1-800-465-8770. That's 1-800-465-8770. We'll be right back. Don't you know I'm still standing better than I ever did? Looking like a true survivor, feeling like a little kid. I'm still standing after all this time, picking up the pieces of my life without you on my mind. I'm still standing. And welcome back. It's Leading Edge Medicine. I'm Lynette. Dr. Samira Umat here in the studio. Dr. Jerry Mixon missing this week. He's doing some research.
He is literally missing.
He really is missing. Yes.
he loves doing the radio show.
Oh, yes. Yes. Oh, boy. And he will be back. But we have Dr. Ken Pentland here, who is our gut specialist. If you've got questions about your gut, boy, today is the day to focus on that. And we're going to talk about all of the glutathione. Things in just a few moments.
I like that word.
But Dr. Umat, should we go ahead and take this caller? Dick has been so very patient.
Let's do that.
Let's do that,
yeah,
and then
absolutely.
We'll dive into our gut health.
Absolutely.
All right. Welcome, Dick, and thank you for your patience.
Hi, Dick. Good morning.
Good morning. I have such a small problem, I'm embarrassed to call.
Not a problem, but I will have you turn your radio down because we're hearing some feedback. Yeah.
I don't have a radio here. Oh, wait a minute. There's one over here on.
There we go. There. Oh, much better.
Sorry about that.
That's okay, Dick. How can we help you?
Well, about a month ago, I went to bed, and a couple hours later, I woke up, and I was soaking wet from sweat from my chest. I changed my clothes and went back to bed, and 3 hours later, I woke up, same thing. This has been going on for quite a while, and I have no idea why I'm sweating at night like that.
Okay, so can you tell me a little bit about the temperature? Have you changed anything in the room, changed your sheets?
No.
I know the seasons are changing. Are you keeping it a little too hot during the day?
No.
None of the above.
It's not hot. It's not warm.
Any other change in your medications? Anything new that might have been added recently?
I had COVID about a week ago.
COVID?
COVID.
Okay.
And I live in a cottage by myself in a senior citizen community. So I just never went outside. I took care of myself. I painfully went through the headaches and stuff and got over it.
Okay.
And finally went to a doctor to say what was wrong. I was having these kinds of problems. He says, well, you have the COVID and you beat it.
And, okay.
I said, well, that's fine. But that was, you know, several weeks, at least several weeks before this sweating started.
But COVID can cause night sweats. Infections can cause night sweats, especially if there's any residual lingering viral infection in your body, that can definitely cause it. Is there anything else that you have associated with it? Do you have a fever during the daytime? Do you have anything else going on? Any allergies?
No, I feel fine.
Okay.
No, I feel fine.
Is there any anxiety or any change at all in your history? Anything that's causing you to worry about anything?
Well, when you're 92 years old, you don't think very much about worrying anymore.
I like that. Okay. Well, I think this sudden onset of night sweats after COVID, I would probably say might be related to the COVID and might be related to some lingering infection. If you don't have any other daytime symptoms, and if you're not sick, short of breath, have a fever, bladder infection, or anything else going on, then I'd probably just watch it. Maybe, you know, reduce the blankets that you're using. Maybe keep the temperature in the room a little bit lower at nighttime. And then just see what happens. If the symptoms don't get better, I'd probably go in and see your doctor, have your blood pressure checked, do a vitals check, make sure your oxygen saturation is okay, and that there's nothing else going on. Okay, you have to be very careful at your age, or at any age, but at your age, sometimes the vasomotor system is not so good. And, you know, you want to make sure that your blood pressure is stable, that you're not dropping too low, that your oxygen saturation is good. Make sure you don't have any kind of an infection going on, okay?
Yeah, I watched my blood pressure because about 4 years ago, I had a heart attack.
Okay.
And my doctor gets after me about walking, so I
good.
And I check my blood pressure from time to time, and I keep it in the 130 to 120 category.
Excellent.
So I don't have high blood pressure.
Okay,
but anyhow, I appreciate your comments, and I'll tough it out for a while. And I've been trying a variety of things. I was having coffee with dinner.
Yes.
And I quit drinking coffee, and I
That's
think
a
that
good
helped
idea.
A little bit.
Even spicy foods with dinner can cause you to sweat at night.
Or alcohol.
Oh, yeah. Alcohol, spicy foods, coffee. Tea.
I've never drank alcohol, so that's not
okay.
a problem.
Yeah, but I guess my only concern is, do you have an infection? I'd like to know sooner rather than later.
Maybe get some blood work done.
Yeah, yeah. So if it continues, doctor.
How would I know if I had an infection?
You want to go to see the doctor and have them do some blood work for you.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Well, thank you for your help. Appreciate it.
You are very welcome, sir. I wish you all the best. Please keep us informed.
Okay. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for the call, Dick. Phone lines are open for you. Get into the phone queue this morning, like Carl and Susan and Dick. And Roger, we're going to answer your question in a few minutes. Here's the number to call. It's 1-800-465-8770. 1-800-465-8770. All right, Dr. Pentland, Dr. Umat, let's talk about gut health and that big word.
Those
glutathione.
Glutathione, okay.
Right. What is glutathione? You know, it's an antioxidant is probably the best way to describe it. It's necessary for detoxification in the liver, I think is probably its primary function. The liver detoxifies the blood in two phases, phase one and phase two, and glutathione is really essential for phase two. And what happens if phase two is slow, you get this buildup of toxic byproducts waiting to go into phase two. And that's not, nobody wants that. So it's important to maintain a supply of nutrients that are necessary for phase two. And glutathione is probably on the top of that list, right? So it makes a good choice for things like liver disease, neurodegenerative disorders, metabolic syndrome. Glutathione is profoundly impactful for those kinds of things. And it can be recycled once it's used up. But like Dr. Umet was saying, oral supplementation isn't always effective. IV supplementation, it goes directly into the bloodstream, goes directly into the tissues from there, and so it's a lot more effective at a lower dose. But it can be used up, right? So once it's used up, it has to be recycled by other antioxidants. And one of the primary antioxidants to recycle it is vitamin C, which we also have as an IV. So IV and glutathione and in vitamin C are both, they make a good combination for liver support and antioxidant status.
I mean, we talk about antioxidants all the time, right? So basically, antioxidants prevent free radical formation. As we get older, we make more free radicals. As we make more free radicals, we are more prone to damage and injury and illness. Our immune systems are compromised. We're not as effective. We don't think as fast. We, you know, just basically slow down. So the body needs nutrients in order to continue to function well. Not only do we have to provide it with the nutrients in the diet and the food that we eat, but we also have to provide the right environment for those nutrients to then be absorbed so that they can perform function. And as it has a tendency to make more free radicals, those nutrients are less and less available for function. So you have to replace them, and the best way to replace is just take them in your diet. So oral makes sense. It's easy. It's convenient. A lot of people can do it. But some things are just not absorbed as well if you take them by mouth, and they have to be given through another system. And glutathione is one which is very potent, but it's best if it gets into the IV. And then for certain other types of issues, like, you know, an infection, or if you are just dehydrated, I just feel that giving a boost of nutrients actually helps. Like, people will hear, you know, if you are in a toxic environment, like Vegas is a classic example. Everybody knows about the oxygen bars and the IV bars. And now I think I've seen on social media posts people advertising this IV therapies in their room, in their at cocktail parties,
right,
in their
homes.
It comes to the and you know, and I think it's not a joke. It's not that, you know, I come sometimes watch those and I go, what are people doing? This is a medical procedure. It should be done in a controlled environment. Yes, if you cannot get to a facility and somebody's been trained to treat you at home, I'm perfectly okay with that. But it's not like, oh, I feel like having an IV, let me go get an IV today. It's not
Does a hangover count as incapacitated?
It definitely counts as being incapacitated.
We're talking about Vegas.
But yeah, definitely counts. And that happens a lot in Vegas. But definitely a proponent of therapies that can help just stimulate and rejuvenate you a little bit. And IV therapies are top of the list for that. We started very simple. We started with a multivitamin IV therapy called the Myers cocktail. And I find that people that are trying to, you know, fight the immune system, like post-COVID, people trying to get back into social integration, but yet their immune systems are compromised, or they're a little bit older and they have some risk factors. And so it's not as easy as a young kid who can kind of fight it off and then, you know, boost their innate immunity by fighting it off. Older people have a harder time. So for those people to do something to kind of, you know, add to the bank balance before you try to take out of it. That's the way I think of it. I'm adding a little bit extra before I take it out, because now, you know, it's going to be used up. And you can do vitamin C's. You can do glutathione, which is an antioxidant. Vitamin C is an antioxidant. You can do NAD. You can do just a simple multivitamin cocktail. We can do taurine. There are so many things. It really depends upon what you're looking for. What do you really need? But I have seen it make a huge difference in people's lives.
Yeah, sure. Right. Like, after food poisoning. when you come back from travel.
Yeah. You know, there's rotaviruses going around.
We're going into flu season, you know, yes. All these reasons, very good reasons to have some IV done.
Yeah. The flu season, if you haven't had your flu shot yet and you're worried and, you know, the holidays are upon us, November is here, it's blustery out. And you know, people will want to visit with you. You'll want to see people. And even if you don't see people, if you go out to the stores, everything is packed. And I went late the other night to the store because I couldn't get there during the day hours. Mm-hmm. And the store shelves were empty and was like, oh my gosh, what happened here?
Yeah, what happened? What's going on? Oh boy. All right, almost 9 o'clock. We need to take a quick break and then we will be back with more questions for the doctors. And we have Dr. Samira Umat here today, also Dr. Ken Pentland, who specializes in your gut health. We'll talk more about that today. And we are going to talk to Jim in just a few moments. If you'd like to get through with your questions for the doctors, here is the number 1-800-465-8770. That's 1-800-465-8770. We'll be right back.